you. How could you, Jack?
I'm sorry, like, I couldn't help it.
That was horrible! Who wrote the script?
Welcome to the movie show! Ha ha ha!
Active FM.
What's up?
Hello, hello, and welcome back
to an awesome
movie show right here
in your ears
on Active FM
on this day with your
hosts, me Sash
and me Ryan. Hello there, welcome. I said that already.
You did say that already.
But yes. You're welcome.
You're welcome. So today we're going to be reviewing the 2020 live action remake of Mulan. Yay!
Can I just say that when you said, Ryan, watch the movie Mulan, it's brilliant. I remember the cartoon and I was like, it's one of those, you know.
But the cartoon was good. Can we just say that the cartoon was good?
And then when she said the live action, I was like, brilliant. Okay, let's do this. And then I watched it. Yeah.
And you were like, Ryan just has a thing against vocals or musicals in movies.
I was smiling at the end of the... You know one of those movies where you're like, oh... Yeah, that was me.
That was Ryan, yes. I remember that... So when Disney has been... They've spoken about the different live-action remakes that they're going to be making. So they've done Cinderella. They've done Beauty and the Beast. They did Lady and the Tramp. They did Dumbo. They've done a lot. There's ones I'm missing. They did Aladdin.
Did you say Jungle Book?
Jungle Book they did. Aladdin, Lion King.
Lion King.
Yeah, they've done a lot. I think we've missed a few, but obviously The Little Mermaid is still coming out. So that they've been in talks of doing these live-action remakes, and now it was time for them to do Mulan. But when it first came out that they were doing Mulan, they said that they weren't going to have Mushu, which was the little red dragon that was freaking awesome in the original animated film. And I remember I was so upset.
Oh, serious?
I was so mad that they didn't put Mushu in, because I was like, what is Mulan without Mushu? It's like nothing.
So now that you've just, because I don't know who that is.
You don't know who Mushu is?
I haven't watched the cartoon.
How could you not have watched the cartoon?
I'm sorry. I'm going to watch the cartoon.
Yeah. You know what? He brought a lot of comedy to the cartoon.
Oh, really?
So he had...
So it was one of those, like, classical... not classical. One of those classic Disney films with humor and quest.
Yes.
Quest and humor.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Let me guess. Who's it? Mushu.
Mushu
was her companion along on the... Whatever.
He was... How do I explain this? So obviously Mulan... There's the ancestors that they pray to.
Yeah.
So he was this little red dragon assigned by the ancestors to protect her.
This was that dragon.
The phoenix, yes.
The phoenix.
But in this one, they changed it to the phoenix, which was kind of just like a guardian that, yeah. But in that one, he had a voice and he was with her constantly giving her advice, telling her what to do.
So was he like brave and all that? Or was he just this like, hi, type of, you know, hi.
He was funny.
Let's go.
He was funny.
But was he like, was he wise type of thing?
At times.
Like one of those like, nope, is it?
No, he wasn't. He was funny.
Was it like Genie?
Yes.
Okay, awesome.
Yes, basically. But I must be honest, I'm glad. So what they did with this one is they didn't make it actually like the animated film. So Beauty and the Beast was exactly the same as the animated film. If you've seen the live action remake, you don't need to watch the animated film. Or if you've seen the animated film, you don't need to watch the live action remake. The only difference is the one's cartoon and the other one's live action.
Do you love radio?
Well, of course, if you're listening to...
And all your entertainment!
With Cinderella, there was a difference. With Aladdin, there was certain differences, although a lot of it was like the original. Whereas with Mulan, they changed it quite a bit, which I actually really liked, because I've seen the animated film, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and now I've seen the live action remake, and it's nice to watch something where you don't, you know what's sort of coming, because you know, obviously you know the story, and you know they're remaking that story, so they can't now go off and tell a completely different story. But the fact that they changed it up slightly, I really, really enjoyed. So the fact that Mushu wasn't in, I've forgiven them, because yeah, the storyline was good. So it wasn't a complete disappointment.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. So the budget for the film is $200 million, and the box office so far is $66.8 million, which isn't pretty big, although this film is fairly new. It is fairly new. Plus, it's been in cinemas, so it actually has been in cinemas. And if you are a Disney Plus subscriber, you have to be a premium subscriber to watch this film. So they haven't yet released it to the normal Disney Plus subscribers. So
serious?
Yeah. So I think it's still a film that hasn't really been released much. It was in cinemas, so you I don't know if it's still in cinemas, actually. I haven't checked. It probably is, though, because cinemas don't have a lot of movies to show. So it probably is still in cinemas. I personally thought I wouldn't enjoy watching this movie in cinemas, and I didn't. But actually, after watching it, I was like, I actually could have gone to watch this in cinemas. It was actually pretty cool. It was pretty good. I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. You know, I found a lot of differences with this movie that you usually don't find in a usual movie. So one of the things that I realized at the end, I was like, there was no like near death or close misses. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. There was no like, oh, we almost never made it or anything like that. It was a story, and it was quite an enjoyable story by the end, because the whole thing was around her obviously being number one, being a girl, and they within that camp they state the whole things. If you have any whatever contact with a woman, or you bring a woman into the camp, you know, what is it?
Expulsion.
Expulsion, but it was execution.
Expulsion or execution.
I think if they brought her in. Yeah, it was one of them.
No, it was both normally. So they said
expulsion or.
Yeah, so expulsion is okay. Basically exile, which is as bad as some of them would have preferred to be executed than be.
Yeah, because it was dishonor to your whole family and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. You see a lot of the like Chinese culture in this movie about the whole thing of honor and stuff like that. So it was pretty like, oh, okay, cool, you know. But yeah, that whole thing where there's like no near misses. It's just her. She comes in, and guess what? She knows Qi. But now there was a blockage. And also like the really, the witch in the end was like, yeah, shame. Would you say she became good?
She redeemed herself.
She changed her heart. Yeah,
she did.
She changed her heart, and she put herself on the line.
She did right. She did what was right. So instead of doing what was wrong, which she kept doing.
There wasn't really a struggle. So I think it's very nice for children to watch as well, because it wasn't all, yeah. So it wouldn't have made my son cry. Actually, he hasn't watched it. Oh, my goodness. Me and my son are going to watch the animated version together. Yes.
Yes. So, just some interesting facts. It took them a year to find the actress to play Mulan. A whole year.
Oh, wow.
So, the creators of Mulan went on a year-long global search for Mulan, the film's lead character. It wasn't after seeing thousands of actresses, dancers, singers, and martial artists that they found Lee, if I pronounce her name correctly, Li Yifei, I think that's how you pronounce her name. According to director Nikki Cairo, Yifei is definitely the only one who could have ever played Mulan. And she's a Chinese-American actress who has starred in a number of notable films, such as The Forbidden Kingdom, alongside Jackie Chan and Jet Li, Outcast, opposite Nicolas Cage, and Chinese romantic fantasy film called Once Upon a Time. She's actually a very, very well-known and well-versed actress. If you search her, the amount of films she's been in, both American and Chinese, she's a very well-known actor. Actually, I obviously didn't know her before this, but I'd actually be interested to go and watch those movies because she's in it, because I did enjoy her acting, and I agree they did find the right person for Mulan. She was the perfect person. And do you know that she performed 90% of all her stunts as Mulan, which included horse riding, sword fighting, martial arts, and battle scenes. So, yeah, most of the stunts she did by herself. 90%.
It's a Chinese Tom Cruise.
Literally. But they trained for this film, eh? If you look at behind-the-scenes footage, they went into months of physical training, horse riding, everything. They really went all out.
That's pretty interesting, because it's like bringing in a stunt woman who knows already how to ride horses versus taking the time and teaching the actor how to horse ride, how to do chi. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. The second thing is the screenplay is inspired by the Ballad of Mulan. So the screenplay of the live-action version was inspired by the Ballad of Mulan, which was written over 15,000 years ago. Although, the 1998 animated film of the same title also took inspiration from the original Chinese poem, the creators of Mulan for 2020 wanted to combine the essential elements of the ballad as well as the beloved Disney animation to create something new and exciting. So Mulan is actually, it's like a Chinese legend. She's actually a Chinese legend. So they say, because I actually searched to see, did Mulan actually exist? Like, is this based on a true story? And they said, no one actually knows, but it is a legend within China. And then I think a poem, which is the Ballad of Mulan, was written, which they then got inspiration to make the animated film, and then now with the live action remake, they remade it. The one thing I did enjoy though about this film is there wasn't singing. But
yeah, there's a song, I like
how they incorporated the songs from the animation into the music. So if you watch the animated film, there's a song called Reflection. There's a couple of songs. And even the one placed in the film, they spoke about, like, your ideal woman. Like, what is your ideal woman? And that was in a song in the animated film. So in the animated film, instead of them talking it, they sang it, yes. Cool. Whereas now they've made it. So it was clever how they interpreted the animated into the live-action remake.
I think that was extremely wise.
Yeah. Yeah. They made it an action film. Do you know that this movie has been nominated for the best action films of 2020? Alongside a film like Tenet, which is extremely action. And it's actually, it's right, because it is an action film.
Yeah.
Most of the film is, like, the action is crazy in the film.
It, even with the live action, it has a very Disney feel.
It does, yeah.
If you're watching it, the way it looks, the coloring, the... Even the sets and even the like the color grading, like you could see the heels, the way, I don't know, just even the shots and the color palette. This is like sort of really nice Disney type of feel to it. Even the shots and that, very cool.
Yeah. So Mulan actually started back in 2015, even though it was released in 2020 only, and filming started in 2018. But the idea for the film actually began 5 years ago. Back then, writers Lauren Hynek and Elizabeth Martin approached producing partners Chris Bender and Jake Weiner with the idea for the Ballad of Mulan soon after. Disney acquired the rights to the film and production began. Producer Chris Bender said, "We were excited to develop something different than the original animated film, since the underlying legend has such strong themes of empowerment. With that, we can expect this live-action film to be full of surprises," which it was, and which I'm very glad that they did, because otherwise you just feel like you're watching the same movie, like Beauty and the Beast. Cinderella I enjoyed because they did bring new elements to it, so they did scenes that hadn't been in before, and they obviously brought in, like Mulan, they brought in elements of the animated, but they changed it up a bit, which I think you should do if you're doing a live animated remake.
So you're saying from the cartoon, the animated, to this live action, there's a few extra surprises and stuff that you don't expect?
Yes. Ah. So first of all, one of the first being in characters, actually. So you know in the film, the love interest of Mulan, in the original cartoon, he is actually one of the commanders leading. He's actually the head of, you know, the battalion she goes to train at?
Yeah.
He's actually the head of the battalion in the original one. Whereas in the live action now, the guy is just one of, he's just another soldier. So he's not actually...
Okay.
Yeah. His name in the live action, it's Chen Hon... I don't know how to pronounce his Chinese names, but he was basically a soldier in this one, which I didn't expect, because now you're waiting for, you know, the commander, and then eventually I was like, wait a minute, which was quite cool, because, you know, you're not predicting the film then. So that was one of the changes that they made. Obviously, the whole fact that Mushu wasn't in was a big change. The witch, she wasn't in the original live animated film. I mean, what am I saying, live animated? In the animated film, there was no witch, there was just... the antagonist.
The guy.
Yes, there was the guy whose name is something. What? No, what was his name again? Oh, flip. They didn't change his name. Bori Khan. So he wasn't in the original animated film. He was the bad guy with his dudes.
That's cool.
His bunch of
rebels. I'm actually looking forward to watching.
So that was quite nice. Now, filming took place in over 20 locations around China.
What?
Over 20 locations, yes. So, in an effort to avoid green screen, thank you people, we try to avoid green screen at all points, they built environments. So, director Nikki Caro brought the entire production team across China to shoot the live-action film. The filmmakers wanted to remain authentic to their source material, which was The Ballad of Mulan, which has been retold multiple times over centuries, passing over dynasties and locations set in North China. Some of the locations used include the Hebei province in central China, the Singing Sand Dunes, the National Geographic Park. So literally they went all over China, northwest, and then they also filmed some shots in the Zhejiang province in East China. I don't think I pronounced the Chinese names correctly. I do apologize to any Chinese person listening. I'm not Chinese at all. But they did. They actually filmed in China. And then on top of that, they filmed battle scenes in New Zealand.
The mountains with the snow in that, hey?
Yes. So, and also I think they have a picture here where you see, you know, at first they were on, like, it wasn't green grass, but it was like on a grass plain. And then... then when you looked up, then there was the snowy mountains.
Yes, that's
so,
the one.
Yeah. So while a chunk of filming was done across China, several significant scenes in the film were actually shot in New Zealand to alleviate logistical challenges. Filming locations including the Mackenzie District, Poolburn, a lot. Even the South Island, which was one of the battle scenes involving 900 people. 900 whole people in one battle scene.
So they had to cut 900 people around.
Yep.
Up the hill, down the hill.
Everywhere around the hill.
All right, guys, to all, what was it? 20 locations.
20 locations plus in China, and then battle scenes were in New Zealand.
How
so was they?
The, yeah.
They like went places.
With all of that, my goodness.
Yeah.
And the costumes?
The costumes were crazy. In fact, the costumes, thousands of costumes were created for the characters. So just as the production team didn't skimp on props and weaponry, because also the weaponry is crazy, they were just as elaborate on the costumes. According to costume designer Bina Dalgela, only 40 people worked on the costumes for the film.
Only 40 people.
The film consisted of 2,062 costumes, 1,104 headwear items, 250 hats, 1,114 outfits for the extras, 590 costumes for the Imperial City scenes, oh my goodness, 100 costumes for the village scenes, 281 sets of Chinese armor, 730 items of Ruron armor, plus the multiple 3 to 5 additional costumes of the main 50 main characters. They were crazy.
That is quite intense. But, I mean, I'm sure, obviously, a lot of it was according to, for example, the army, you know, the army, actual, what was it?
The Chinese, the Imperial Army.
That guy's army, yes, the Imperial Army. I recognize the whole out, the way that they, that armor, the armor pads and stuff like that.
And the helmets.
I like the way that when she had... finally sort of let her hair down, if you can put it that way, how they sort of combine it, because if you like the top parts and that the padding came off, but then there was the bottom padding parts by like almost what is it like her thigh, like on the side, those were still sort of there. So it wasn't like she was like this, you know, sort of half armored looking weird type of dressed up, you know, but it still looked quite nice, even when she had come out and stuff.
Yes.
And like I said, I enjoyed the fact that there was no near misses, or she was like, half dying and she has to come out and now she must use her chi or anything like that. it was a really good piece. What I enjoyed the most, and what I wanted to know, is in the cartoon, there was the guy, the leader of that
Khoi Khan.
That pack.
Yes.
Of the pack. And there was the guy that was with him. So there was him, who was like the leader guy. He would like dish out the orders. And there was another guy that was with him that was like, you shall go.
No, you're talking about on the Imperial Army side. Yes. So there was the voice.
There was the main guy that you said that she was supposed to be, he was supposed to be the love interest, but then in live action he's not.
Yes.
He still comes back to the village afterwards and he's still like, no, we want to honor your daughter, whatever, your family, blah, blah, blah. So there's that guy. And then there's another guy that comes with him that seems to be second in charge type of thing. Their voices are so epic.
Yeah, no, their voices
like
were very
they've
epic.
They've got this low, like, hectic. It wasn't like, this we shall now honor you. It's like, the voice. I was just like, oh, when this guy talks, I'm like, woo!
That's why they made him the voice. No, that wasn't in the live action, in the animated. In the animated, so the love interest was the commanding officer. And then, you know, the emperor, he's like second in, he's 2IC, you know, the witch still manipulated him. He originally in the animated went with that battalion. So he was actually working.
He was with them.
Yeah, he was actually with them. So those two characters were new characters from what I can remember.
Sure. Yeah, so there are some, okay, cool.
Yeah, so they did do. Yeah, pretty cool things.
So what you're saying is that if I watch the live animated, I'm going to feel almost like I'm watching just a bit of... the characters, I'll probably understand where they come from, who they are, but then, same scenario, just different... Maybe not different, just another
version.
You'll
see like where the concept came from, but like another version of it.
Oh, that's cool. I wonder why they created the witch, though. It's quite weird that they've just added in...
They did have... So she often... changed into a hawk. In the animated film, Khoi Khan did have a hawk on him, so he had but the hawk never changed into anything. Whereas in this one, they incorporated her as being the hawk.
Was there any sort of supernatural connection between him and the hawk? So, for example, the hawk would go out and spy and come back and sort of...
Yes.
So there was that type of thing.
Yeah, there was
okay,
that thing.
That explains.
Yeah.
So, that means that there could be a different ending to it, because for me, watching her sort of making right... That for me, you know, that was the type of moment, because that was the moment where I was just like, okay, sure. So she, and then he was able to be defeated, sort of in a way, yes, because it was by her help. Did the hawk betray him in the animation?
No,
version?
The hawk did not betray. That's why it was pretty cool what they did with the how they brought in the witch, but then they also redeemed her at the end and actually gave her an opportunity to make right. For what she had done.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. This is crazy, though. Do you know that they only had 75 days to film this movie? And as a result, the actors did over 3 months of martial arts training in order to prepare themselves for the complex stunt sequences. So they actually, they didn't put a lot of time into the filming. They actually put more of the time into the preparing, which is clever, I think. And then obviously... Yeah. Yeah, they took, and then also the amount of weapons created for this film, there were over 4,000 weapons made for the film.
That's hectic.
Over 4,000 weapons.
Yo, that was really good, because, I enjoyed, the beginning, the part where she was a little girl, and then, the whole roof thing, and you're like, cool, and then she even, gets off, and she does this, arm thing across her, and I was just like, whoa, okay, that was cool. I was like, clap.
Ah.
Well done.
Can I just say, though? I feel like this film, especially the fight sequences, you know how Chinese films are very, very dramatic with their fight sequences and sometimes even fake. I feel like this film had an element of that in, when they ran up walls, I was like, is that really possible?
How was the camera twist as well?
That was cool.
Yeah.
But for me, and the one part I was like, no, man, they shouldn't have done that, was when the emperor picked up material and then was fighting off guys with these long pieces of material.
You know what? I think that's
the chi thing.
The chi thing, yeah.
But still, I was like, oh man, the witch I got, because I'm like, okay, yeah. Fine, she has supernatural powers. Still, I was like, meh. But yeah, sometimes, it was cool. So the film starts and you see Bori Khan and his gang, and next minute they literally run up. But it's not like they run up a wall. But it's not like they jump off their horse and run two steps. Because then it's like, you're okay,
it's
momentum.
From the horse right onto the wall.
But then
they
take like 10 steps up before getting over the wall. Do you understand? So I'm like, momentum would take you maybe like 2 steps up, but 10.
I think it's that, forget reality. Just because they from what I understood from them, obviously he's the bad guy, you know, but he's not just bad, he's evil. You know, it's not like there's a gender, you know, I want to take over my father's kingdom. They were separate to me. Nothing like that. This is more just the thing of I'm evil and I want to kill. Yes, yeah. It's that kind of thing. So I think that just took them a level up from being just normal to, you know, like these guys are like there's something like freaky about them type of thing. Like there's nothing. There's no wall that can stop them. There's nothing that can stop this guy. It sort of adds in that really evil. Level to it, yeah, because I mean when they ran up the walls, the first thing I did, now like I'm like knowing CG, I like whoa, stop. So I've got a MacBook, so if you got it in a QuickTime with your trackpad, you can just sort of go just back and forth, and I was trying to look at the blend between when they
did that.
Yeah,
they actually, so what they did was they had them stringed, yeah. They had them on ropes,
like harnesses.
and then they that's why they were saying the stunts in this film are crazy.
But
even the stunts on the horse, she did those stunts on the horse.
Yeah.
What they did, they had the camera set up. What they did with most of their things was they'd like film like a short. They like broke up their fight sequences, and then like whenever there was a hectic part. So there's one part where you see Mulan jump, and then she like flies over the soldiers, but the camera stays on top of her as she goes. They actually just filmed that one sequence by itself. So you'd see they'd take her. They obviously made it in slow-mo as well.
Yeah.
But they literally took... Yeah. And do you know... So you know the commander of the battalion? In the beginning, he does like a crazy with the sword. He like... You know how they play around?
Yeah,
not play around with the sword. They do... Do you know he did that for real? And he does it so fast that the director actually was like, we have to get this in slow-mo just to see what he's doing. That he actually did that with the sword. That is like him.
This is all the training, right, that they get because
I think some of them did have... It wasn't... They were completely untrained. Some of them, I think, did come in with training.
You see, that is so cool.
But one thing I want to talk about, and I think it's one of my favorite things in the whole film, is the film score, the soundtrack. For me, the soundtrack was brilliant. So obviously, they did bring in the original animated film score. They brought in pieces. But also, they didn't do the musical. So what they did was they brought back iconic tunes that composer Harry Gregson Williams made for the original film score. But also what they did was they used Chinese instruments in the orchestra. So when you listen to the music, there's a lot of Chinese instruments that come through, like Chinese flutes. There's a Chinese violin that comes through, which they all obviously have Chinese names, and then percussion instruments such as gongs, bells, and cymbals. But the soundtrack is brilliant. The soundtrack for this film, it really, really, really is good. Like they did very well. Like the fact that they took it from a musical to not being a musical, that transition with bringing back brilliant. I've listened to the soundtrack by itself. That's how good the soundtrack is.
Serious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's cool.
No, the soundtrack, and the one thing I do like about the soundtrack is how they brought in the Chinese instruments. So they're playing, and the score's beautiful. The music really is, it's very, very good. But then at the same time, what I enjoyed was they brought in, because they didn't have to bring in the Chinese instruments. It's not like they do that. Do you understand what I'm saying? Normally you just have an orchestra, you know, your orchestra does its job, and then you're like, okay, cool, sweet. Like, I don't even know if they might have. But in the original one, I don't know if they brought in Chinese instruments.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, I can't remember. I watched it quite a while ago. That obviously some of the singing had like very Chinese. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too much, but sort of at some parts.
You know, that kind of.
But it was very, very good. So the composer for this film was Harry Gregson Williams, and the composer, there were four composers for the 1998 musical. It was Matthew Wilder, Jeremy Goldsmith, Stevie Wonder, and David Zippel.
Why do I know Jeremy Goldsmith? He rings a bell. Maybe it's just the name, the surname, but Jeremy as well. It rings
a bell.
He's
done a lot. He did Star Trek. He's done quite a few.
Okay.
So I think he's just probably one of those well-known composers that...
Yes.
But older composer. All his movies were around the 1970s, 60s. To like the 1990s, yeah, because
okay.
he died in 2004, so his career was mainly late 1900s, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it is a very good film. Go watch it. For me, I'd say it is one of the best live-action remakes that they've done. And you know that the director and the cinematographer of this film was, they were both women.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I was like, oh, a woman directed this. And the cinematographer as well is also a woman. But apparently the director, Nikki, she's very well versed in the Chinese culture and actually has quite a love for it.
So who?
So the director.
Ah,
so
okay.
The actors were all saying she's like the perfect director for this film because she respects the culture and knows so much about it. So she was able to bring it to life, yeah, in the best way possible.
Well, I think that definitely added in the fact that she, that.
Reacting. Being reactive is being a people of reaction, people of change, being a movement of young people. It's not just a band, it's not just good music or inspiring words. It's not just catchy, it's life-changing.
Check us out on Spotify, iTunes, Deezer, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Yeah, so go check it out, and you can also go check us out on all social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Parler, Gab, Reddit. We also are on WhatsApp. You can get our WhatsApp number on our social media pages. Just go check, especially Instagram. You can check out our bio. You'll find the number there. And then we also have an amazing website, www.activefm.co.za.
And if you are a Spotify subscriber, you can go look for us on, for Active FM. We are there as well. Spotify, go look for it, subscribe, and then, of course, you get the bing, 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 bing in your phone whenever new things come out, new podcasts and that, as well as you can go to, if you have Google Podcasts, we are on Google Podcasts, we are on Apple Podcasts, believe it. And then also, if you go onto YouTube, we have two channels there. Go check out Active FM, that channel, and also Active TV. Active TV has also loads. Guys, just go look at the playlist. Go look at the playlist. That's all I'm going to say.
Go look at the playlist, right? Yes.
Yeah.
So this has been the movie show on Active FM.
With me, Ryan.
And me, Sash.
Until next week.
Until next week. Peace out.
And learn chi.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.